someone else's journey is our lesson.
We used to say, the difficult we do immediately, the impossible just takes a little more time.
Someone else's lesson is our gift.
I believe part of our responsibility is really to equip and inspire our students to ask those difficult questions.
Be encouraged by the stories that lift us all.
I came to Howard because I wanted to be the President of the United States.
Somebody saw something in me, and it's my duty to be that person for somebody else.
Now, join Dr. Wayne Frederick, President of Howard University, and his guest on The Journey.
At the center of his work for more than three decades has been the training and preparation of undergraduate and graduate students in the field of psychology. He is passionate and compassionate, a teacher's teacher. His students call him awesome. His colleagues call him humble. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guest today on The Journey is a professor here at Howard that I had the pleasure of awarding a presidential citation to, psychology professor Dr. Kamara Jules Harrell. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Dr. Frederick.
So you were born and raised in Helena, Montana.
That's right. And I've taught students at Howard from Montana. People don't believe that there are people of African descent in Montana, but my father's people were basically part of the Buffalo Soldier Regiment that settled out there during the late 1800s.
Oh, okay.
So there was a population out there at that time. I think after enslavement, after that, the emancipation, people just went everywhere in the United States. And, of course, that's how we ended up out that way.
And so tell me what your childhood was like growing up in Montana with not a lot of black people around you, I would imagine.
I think that what happened is that around the turn of the century, there was a good, strong community. There was a church. In fact, there were two black churches in the town, as we look back on it. And there was a newspaper at one point. But by the time the 50s get there, the population had declined somewhat. So therefore, there were still organizations around. So we had some, they called them the Federation of Colored Women's Clubs were there. So they would have a Christmas party and picnics in the summer. But for the most part, you were sort of isolated. In the school, you were very obvious. You know, if you were absent, it was very obvious you weren't there that day. and in that sense, it was kind of interesting. And especially during the 50s, when the civil rights movement picked up, there was a lot of anxiety, around that. What is really happening in this country? I think that the good thing about it was that it showed how community can come around and sort of insulate us from a lot of the real problems that could have existed there.
And now, your schooling at that time, you obviously attended schools in Montana, which I would assume were not as diverse at a time when the country was changing. What was your education like?
Well, basically, my mother and my father passed when I was 14 years of age, but they had put us into Catholic schools. And so we received a very strong, kind of a rigorous education, but it was a good, strong education. And for the most part, you're the only African-American in your class. I had a brother and a sister that were closer to my age. I had a younger brother much later on. But you were pretty much the only one there, is what it was. And so it was kind of an exceptional kind of a thing. If you did well, you did very well. If you didn't, then you were quickly seen as somebody who was sort of a rogue, right.
Now, your parents, they met at Xavier in New Orleans.
I find that so interesting because my father was from Montana. My mother was from as far south in Louisiana as you can get, a little place called Abbeville. Right. And you look south of that, and you see Cain, and you see the Gulf of Mexico. And they met at Xavier. So I tell students here, if you're meaning to meet somebody, you're going to meet them, to make sure of that. But they met, he had served in World War II, and she was a young person coming off out of the country. And they met there and moved back to Montana.
Now, clearly, education was important and going to college was extremely important. What influenced your decision to attend University of Colorado?
I think that what happened was my older brother had moved to Colorado. He was a couple of years older than I was. And he talked about the University of Colorado as being a very strong school. And I think that's why one of the reasons I went down there. I figured that when I visited down that way, that it was large, but it wasn't so overwhelming that I would get lost in it.
And you did your BA in psychology there. You were introduced to the work of Frantz Fanon.
Coming out of high school, I didn't know who Pelé was, and some students, some African students, talked to me about Pelé, and I said, well, wait a minute, we're all over this hemisphere, not only in the, you know, in the United States and Canada, but we're all in the Caribbean. And there was a group of graduate students, black graduate students at Colorado, who were studying Fanon at that time. And so they actually set up a course around him. And, of course, he's a psychiatrist by training, but I think his training was a little bit broader than most, because he wrote so beautifully and lyrically. And this is through translation, I mean, because the original stuff is in French. And I was studying French at the time, so I would love to go back and forth on that. And it sort of just opened my mind that there's a different way of looking at psychology. He talked about the people we were learning about, Freud and Jung and some of these people that we study. But he took a critical perspective on it. And I think since then, I've always had that critical eye toward what you get in any field. You know, you read it, you sort of acknowledge the greats, but then you know that they too can be critiqued.
That's exactly right. Now, you also then went on to University of Illinois,
yes,
where you did your master's and PhD in clinical psychology. What about that experience forms what led you into the educational field, especially around research?
Everybody thinks, I think, not everybody, but many people that major in psychology think that they're cut out to be clinicians. And I thought that too. But I found that it was just that being a clinician took so much out of me. But by the end of the day, I was just, and especially if you're dealing with people who are either heading toward the criminal justice system and you can't stop that, or in depression and you have difficulties, you know, holding those things at bay. That really sort of took a toll on me. And about my third year, I told my wife, I think I'm going to be a researcher. I love teaching. And I really enjoyed the research side of it, but I don't know that I'll ever be much of a clinician. And so I think that by that time, I sort of moved into this area called psychophysiology, where we look at the physiological effects of behavior. And I felt just that was a good fit for me.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Dr. Jules Harrell, professor in the Department of Psychology here at Howard University. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. So you decide to not do clinical psychology, to get into research and teaching, and you gravitated to Virginia State University and got into the HBCUs. Why? How did that job come about?
No, you know, I met an individual at Illinois who was my teacher there. One of my teachers there was a guy named Bill Lawson, William Lawson, who was actually a wrestler at Howard. But at the time I met him, he was a physiological psychologist working with rats on taste preferences in rats. And but he had an allergy, and he said he was going to go back to medical school, but he talked about Howard. There was another individual who was in the program who was on leave from Virginia State, and he said, you need to go down and see what's going on at Virginia State, you know, as a teaching kind of a thing. And I went to, I'll never forget this as long as I live, we flew, my wife and I and my little girl, who was about a year at that point, flew into Richmond Airport, and a woman met us there named Keturah Whitehurst. Whitehurst was a student here at Howard, got her master's here, with Kenneth Clark as her undergraduate assistant. And she walked up to us at the airport, and she took our little girl in her arms, and she said, well, it's nice to meet you all. And then she started talking to the baby. And I said, now, this is something that my little girl just loved her on sight. And we drove down to Petersburg, and I said to my wife, I said, I think we're hooked, because we had never seen a campus, an HBCU campus like that. And when we met with the students, it was all over. It was over.
So you spent 4 years there, and then you came to Howard University, yes, where you met your mentors, Dr. Leslie Hicks and Sterling,
yes,
Brown.
Yes.
What was that like? I mean, those are icons we talk about a lot, but you've lived with them, in them.
Yeah, meeting Dr. Hicks, in fact, when I came up here for a summer, and I said that, you know, Howard overwhelmed me a little bit. It was large because I was working down at the medical school. Dr. Hawthorne was there. There was a guy named Lavelle Cothran. I remember Dr. Cothran very clearly. And it was just such an interesting experience. And I went up and talked to Dr. Hicks. And that's when he sort of, in his way, said, you know, you would be training PhD students here. And he planted that little seed. And I said, oh, my goodness. And I read Dr. Hicks's work. He had done some work on what they call psychomotor slowing. With age, we slow down. And he had done some really important work in that area. And, you know, I couldn't get it out of my mind that I would be actually training PhD students. And he had the department set up in such a well-organized situation where we taught and were expected to teach well, but we were told to be in the labs with the students. That's what we were really there.
I know you've been here for 37 years. You've directed the dissertations of over 40-plus doctoral students. With that in mind, for the when you look at the 30 years or so that you've been here, what are some of the things that you have witnessed in terms of the changing that has occurred in terms of the students then, what they were about, what their goals and aspirations were, their work ethic versus today?
You know, that's interesting, and I think about that all the time. And I look at what students are doing now. We have students that came through the department that are now college presidents, for example. We have students that are provosts all over the map, really. And I look at the students today, and I say, these students will go off to be college presidents, and they'll be provosts just like the ones that were there before. That's been a constant with me. What's changed, I think, in the field is that to do research now, it's so expensive to do some of the things that you need to do in the field. We're talking about millions and millions of dollars for some of the equipment that you need. And I know it was expensive in the past also, but it was more affordable, I think. And then you need technicians to keep the equipment running. Yeah. And if something breaks down, you know, it's like losing something on a Mercedes. You're not going to get it cheaply, you know. That the thing that's really changed is that side, it's almost like a stratification of the field into those that can afford to do the research, those institutions that do it, on a budget that's satisfactory, and those of us that really struggle to get this, to get this thing going.
And you obviously get a lot from teaching.
Oh, my goodness.
The students. And psychology is the second most subscribed undergrad major here at Howard University. Yeah. And what are you seeing in terms of the continued attraction for students to psychology?
You know, and it's sort of like good luck. You just say, well, you just hope it doesn't stop. I think that there's a lot of questions that people have that are behavioral in nature, because of the what's going on in a larger society, family structures, these kinds of things. They see a lot of people who are suffering, I think, and I think that's something that moves people in that direction. Recently, the CSI, crime scene investigation shows, that's moved a lot of people, because everybody comes in thinking that they're going to be that they're going to be some kind of a criminal profiler. Those things, I think, are feeding it. But there's a curiosity, I think, that we have about why do people act as they act. Yeah. What happens when an individual becomes addicted, for example? Yeah. Why is it that grandmother won't take her medication? Those are all behavioral questions, and they're just all around us.
Now, your research has informed you, obviously, about the society around you. How have you used that, especially when it comes to mentorship? The Faculty Senate awarded you in 2008, the Faculty Senate Award for Mentorship as an exemplar. What about your research has also informed you about that need for us to pass on from one generation to another? And on both sides, really, it's a two-way street. There's something the mentee gets, but the mentors get it. There's something in them that they need.
You know, I think looking around me at Howard, I said, now the people who are that you respect the most are those who are mentors to individuals. I think of Dr. Callender. I met him through an individual, a guy named James Baton, was a statistician at Howard. And this is back in the 30s. I would say he probably finished his master's degree at Howard and went on, or his bachelor's degree at Howard anyway. But he worked with students teaching statistics, which is a despised course by a lot of students. But he worked with them and he mentored them. And there was always a sense of peace around Dr. Baton. He was a big, strong guy, a Robeson-like guy. But there was a peacefulness about him, too, because he knew that he had done some things that were going to be passed on. And that model, and that, I saw it in a number of people around here, that they were working with students, and there was a certain kind of a calmness about them because they knew that what they had done wasn't going to stop with them.
As we close, we're hiring junior faculty all the time. What advice do you have for that young faculty member who is joining the ranks here at Howard University?
You know, everybody looks to publications and getting the best graduate student that you can find. All that's important. But if you work with these undergraduates, they'll keep a lab running. There were times I'd have to go home when my children were small, something would happen, and I would come back and things would be running better when I got back because of the undergraduates. So I always encourage them to work with the undergraduate students, work with them, and it'll be a definitely a strong payoff in that.
Thanks for being here. My guest today has been Dr. Jules Harrell. He is a professor of psychology here at Howard University. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne Frederick on the Howard University Radio Network.